The ball is tipped, and there you are. You're running for your life. You're a shooting star. One shining moment is all on the line. One shining moment.
What's up, college basketball fans? Welcome to episode 19 of CBB 365. I'm Patrick Dallahan, as always, joined by my main man, Adam Hipsky. On this week's episode, we had the opportunity to sit down with Wofford men's basketball head coach Jay McCauley. On top of that, we discussed the potential bubble format that will be used by the NCAA and the latest cheating allegations against LSU Tigers head coach Will Wade. All right, so joining us today is our second head coach that we've had on the podcast, Jay McCauley, Wofford head coach. Jay, thank you so much for coming on.
Appreciate you guys having me.
All right, Coach, we'll start off about your career as a college player. You spent 4 years at Georgia. What are some things that you took away from your experiences as a player that have helped you as a coach?
Yeah, I had four really fun years in Athens, Georgia, playing for University of Georgia. And, you know, that experience, like a lot of players, helped to shape me a lot as I kind of matured throughout college and then obviously got into coaching. And everyone's story is kind of different and their experiences are different. But I had the pleasure of kind of going through two different staffs when I was a player, guys. One with Jim Herrick, who won a national title. So I got to see it, how he did it at a high level. And then I won a championship with Coach Felton, and he did it completely different. And for me as a young coach, it was great. It was an internship for me to kind of see it both ways. Mm-hmm. So I was very fortunate that way. Made a lot of good friends during college and a lot of really, really good teammates that obviously it was a good experience for me.
You obviously worked around the Bulldog team in Georgia a bit after your playing career before joining the staff in Wofford in 2008. Was coaching always something that you wanted to get into? And how does a kid who grew up in Georgia and played at Georgia end up coaching in Spartanburg, South Carolina?
Yeah, it's been a crazy journey. I found out pretty quickly, fellas, I was not going to play in the NBA. My first shot was rejected into the rafters of Stegman Coliseum at my first practice. So I knew pretty quickly I wasn't going to be playing too much longer. But I think all of us that get into coaching are impacted in different ways. And certainly at an early age, my dad coached me a lot in sports. So that had a huge influence on me. And then I had really good high school coaches playing baseball and basketball. And then, like I just alluded to, Coach Herrick and Coach Felton had a tremendous impact on me. So I knew I wanted to get into coaching. When I got to college, I knew my playing days were numbered, and I quickly started focusing on that.
So you got your very first taste of the NCAA tournament in 2010 with Wofford when you guys won the SoCon and got in as a 13 seed, but ultimately lost a close game to Wisconsin. What do you remember when you look back on that experience?
It was just really neat to do it with that team because Wofford had never been before, fellas. And when you can take a program from the bottom and build it up the way we wanted to do it, and to see our guys have a chance to play in March Madness, you guys know this, filling out your brackets.
Yep.
There's nothing better than March Madness. Mm-hmm. And I had done it with Georgia, and then 2 years later, taking Wofford with Coach Young and our staff with a bunch of guys that signed up to play for Wofford, but there really wasn't a whole lot of winning tradition. So when you finally get over that hump, it took us a half, fellas, to settle down in that game. We were not ourselves. And the second half, we turned it on, and a couple things didn't go our way to where we almost upset a pretty good Wisconsin team. But that catapulted us guys to our second, third, fourth, and now our fifth championship. It all started with that first run.
Mm-hmm. And you spent a bulk of your coaching career from 2010 to 2017 as an assistant at Gardner Webb and Furman, but then you returned to Wofford before the 17-18 season. What drew you back to Wofford after you first left?
Yeah, it was just that the magic that we had, our first championship, guys, it had everything to do with the people at Wofford, starting with Coach Young. And you guys probably know of Coach Young, and now he's at Virginia Tech, but he's got a way about him, a presence about him, that built this whole deal up, you know, in his 30 years here at Wofford. And he asked me to come back in a different position as the associate head coach. So for me, it was kind of the next step in my career of accomplishing my goal of being a head coach. And he knew in the next few years, if we really fully reached our potential with that team, I would have an opportunity to do so. And sure enough, that 2018-19 team was special, fellas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
21-0 in our conference. Just had a perfect storm of older guys, experienced guys, and a lot of talent. So
and the GOAT, Fletcher McGee.
Yeah. If you got any of you guys shoot like Fletcher McGee, if so, I'm going to offer you guys a scholarship right now.
Mini basketball me is pretty much the equivalent of Fletcher McGee.
Well, he looks like he doesn't know what he's doing sometimes when he just shoots all bounds, but they go in. Mm-hmm. And obviously, when you have a player like that, that raises the level of everyone around, and the defense has to respond to all that stuff. And it just made us real different guys, which I think made us a tough out in the NCAA tournament.
And you talked about Mike Young a little bit in that last question, but can you describe what your relationship was like with him over the years? Obviously, you spent multiple seasons with him.
Yeah, he was just a big influence on me, how he did things. And, you know, I tell people all the time, Coach Herrick is probably one of the best coaches I've ever been around as far as just the total package. Dealing with players, dealing with administration, winning games, dealing with referees in the heat of the battle. Mm. And the only one that came close to rivaling him, I thought, was Coach Young. And he was 5-0, fellas, in the championship games that he was a part of. And he's a winner in every sense of the word. Guys love playing for him. Look at how many coaches that have coached under him that are now head coaches or assistants in college basketball. So it speaks volumes to kind of how he molds people and I think injects confidence in those guys. And certainly our relationship was really, really strong, and he helped me in a lot of ways. So I lean on him still to this day. And, you know, he's obviously doing great things at Virginia Tech.
One of the games that really put Wofford on the map this year was obviously your upset over my least favorite team in college basketball, the Seton Hall Pirates, which I'm forever thankful for, by the way, where Fletcher McGee made 7 threes and broke the all-time three-pointers record. As someone who had a front-row seat, what was Fletcher McGee all about aside from being a March Madness legend?
Yeah, just having a chance to have a front-row seat to watch some of his performances, fellas, was unbelievable. And specifically that game, you know, Patrick, where he just – Seton Hall was running multiple bodies at him, and he was, you know, spin dribbling into NBA threes, falling away into fans, you know, full speed in transition, pulling up. And you could just see it deflated their whole body language over there. And they cut it really close there in the second half. But we went on a 21-0 run to close out the game, and it had a large part to do with him just – he was in his zone. And people always ask me what he was about, and every day he had a routine. He would be stretching guys as the coaches go to the meeting room and hotels. He'd be up at 7:30 a.m. doing his yoga routine in the hallway of his hotel. And after games, he would go find a gym and do an hour and a half of game speed shooting. And he was just about hard work, sticking to his routine. He had the utmost confidence in himself and our team, and that rubbed off on how he played. And that's about as simple as I can tell you
with
how he operated. He was a different animal.
And after that season, Coach Young left for Virginia Tech and you were named head coach at Wofford. What was that transition like from the associate head coach role into the head coach role?
Adam, it was freaking awesome, man. No, it was really humbling. And, you know, things moved really quickly after that. We came this close to beating Kentucky, and we were really down for our seniors and all the work that they had put in. We thought we could get to a Sweet 16 and beyond, but it just didn't work out. And then a week later, things just started unraveling, and the perfect storm of Coach Young going back to where he grew up, 5 minutes from where he grew up. His parents lived there. I think it's one of the few schools he would have left to go to, and he did get that opportunity. And luckily, you know, the last 13, 14 years, I've been preparing for that opportunity myself. So It was a real quick, stressful 2 weeks, but at the end of it, we were pretty excited. Our players were pumped that it stayed in-house, I think.
Yeah.
You asked them that today, maybe they'd give you a different answer. But during that time, we were really excited, and obviously that kind of did a springboard for us into the summertime and getting those guys back to campus. Mm-hmm.
So, speaking of almost beating good teams like Kentucky, your signature win from your first year as the head coach was the win over UNC. What does a big upset win like that do for a first-year coach, and what did it do for the team?
Yeah, for our team, it definitely helped us with some confidence. We went on quite a run there around that time period of December and January. And when you do that with really good players, you do that with older guys that have a belief that they can go in. That's an intimidating environment, guys. Mm-hmm. Wofford's done this the last decade. They've played those games because they have to, guarantee games.
Yep.
Those teams have to play us because we have a good net ranking. But you better go in there believing that you're going to win or you're going to get embarrassed. To our guys' credit, a lot of them were 2 years removed from doing that the first time in the Dean Dome. And so they did a great job of helping our young guys understand what it was going to take to go in there and believe and get the job done. And mm-hmm. to do it on that historical floor, Carmichael, was even cooler for our guys. Yeah. So real thankful to UNC that they played us again. And obviously we celebrated a lot that evening. It was fun.
So when you look back at your first season as head coach, obviously – fairly successful first season, but is there anything you'd like to personally improve on going forward?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's a lot, and I've challenged my guys to improve on their weakness. I better be improving on mine. You know, that's the least I can do for my team. I challenge our staff that way as well. But there's a lot of things I think in my first year that kind of came at my staff and I like a tidal wave. You're getting adjusted to a new role. I had my second child, my wife and I had our second child the night of my first game in November. So we were deflected things as they came last year. So I think managing the entire thing and trying to find out what's the most important thing that day is a thing I can improve on. Instead of trying to do everything all at once is something I can do a lot better job of. But we're looking forward to getting everybody back and hopefully having a chance to do that. You know, guys, we got to get back on the court.
Yep.
The SoCon has at least three tournament caliber teams heading into next season. In addition to yourself, Furman's Bob Ritchie and UNC Greensboro's Wes Miller appeared on ESPN's Top 40 Coaches Under 40. What did those guys and their teams add to the future of a conference that's historically been considered a mid-major conference?
I talk about this a lot all the time, and everybody wants to know when we're going to get another team in the tournament. We're usually a one-bid league, but we've gotten to the point, guys, as Steph Curry left the conference, everyone thought we were going to take a hit. Well, to our conference credit, we've got a bunch of teams that I think made our conference even stronger. Mm-hmm. And coaches in this league, the talent that comes in, it usually sticks around guys quite a bit because we're right at that mid-major power. We're right on the fringe to where I don't think we see a lot of guys jumping ship all the time if they are really good. So when you have those guys here for 3-4 years developing and you have quality coaches in the league that stick around because the basketball is really good and you see teams like us go to UNC and upset teams, I think we're getting pretty close to having the argument of getting another team in the NCAA tournament. And you do that with just really good players first and foremost. So as long as we keep the talent guys coming into our league and keeping them around, you know, I think the sky's the limit for Southern Conference.
Mm-hmm. And to wrap things up, one last question. With all the craziness going on in college sports right now and all the uncertainty around next season, what are you and your players trying to do to prepare for what could be a unique 2020-2021 season?
Yeah, another great question that I probably don't have the answer to, but we're being as creative as we can. And, you know, programs from all over the country are doing Zoom calls like these, you know, in the meantime, to stay connected, to challenge guys in different ways. We've certainly done that. We've had a lot of guest speakers come talk to our team during this pandemic, you know, quarantine time, that really, I think, give a unique message to why we've been so successful the last 10 years. But we'll get our guys back on campus, Adam, here in the next week or so. And once we do, we've got to have a plan A, B, and C, because we don't know where this thing's going, you know. And as long as our guys focus on doing their job and staying in the moment and kind of being flexible, so to speak, and not complaining or making excuses because what we're all in, I think we'll be A-OK. And usually Wofford teams have done a good job of just staying in their lane and focusing on those things. So if we continue to do that, you know, I like our chances this year. We'll be young, but we got a few older guys that have been around the block that I think will show them the way. And we're looking forward to getting started.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. It means a ton, especially for a guy who's made the tournament and had as much success as you have.
Well, I appreciate you three guys. And I got to get you a Wofford uniform in the back there to hang up. You know,
yeah,
maybe
sure.
In the middle, get you a Fletcher McGee jersey or something like that.
Yes,
get
sir.
You guys geared up. All right.
All right. Thank you.
Good luck this season, Coach.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Big thanks to Jay McCauley, the head coach of the Wofford Terriers men's basketball team. Really one of the best up-and-coming coaches in the country. I'd imagine at a big Power 5 school one day. But there's been a lot of college basketball news, some good and some bad. Starting this episode off on a somber note, the college basketball community had three passings this week alone. Cliff Robinson, former UConn Husky, Lou Olson, former Arizona head coach, and most recently John Thompson, who coached at Georgetown, coached guys like Alonzo Mourning, Patrick Ewing, Allen Iverson. It's a sad week for a lot of the older college basketball fans. Obviously, we didn't really get to see many of those, but it really puts in perspective to me, at least, that life is a gift, I guess. Every day is a gift, Art Lovely, John Rothstein. But moving on into good news, the NCAA recently, just today actually, trademarked Battle in the Bubble, which is huge. I mean, we've obviously been big advocates, but now it seems as if that it's actually going to happen.
Well, it's different because what they're talking about now is the Battle in the Bubble is the preseason tournaments instead of the conference tournaments. But it's still a point towards college basketball happening, which obviously I think that would be crazy, having all of the college basketball preseason tournaments that feast week, you know, moving it to instead of feast week, having it being Battle in the Bubble. But that's a step in the right direction. That means that, I mean, a bubble, I'm not saying that a bubble is one of the most sure things, but it's one of the most sure things in sports right now. I mean, the NBA is having complete success with it. So is the NHL. So to hear that the college basketball is planning on moving to a bubble maybe, I mean, that's good news, I would say, for us in terms of whether or not we're going to have college basketball this year. And, you know, we're still pretty far out. It's not like college football, which we have, you know, I guess going on currently with the first game this past weekend. But, you know, the preseason tournaments, if that's the only college basketball we have this year, which I really hope it's not, if it goes successfully, is there a chance that we get conference bubbles like Klein said? I mean, it's a possibility. I'm not saying it's likely. I think it'd be really weird. And I think it's a lot different than preseason tournaments. When preseason tournaments, they're already traveling. It's no different. You know, if they did their actual season there, you'd be there for a lot longer with classes and academic and all that going on. But I don't know, man. I mean, bubble is just the fact. And they haven't announced a bubble for sure. Just trademarking Battle in the Bubble just kind of makes it seem, you know,
it's
like it's in the works.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's in the works is just positive. And yep. So hopefully we move towards that and get more details on that. But, I mean, wouldn't you guys agree that bubbles have been a success? They've been yes. a complete success. And if college basketball heads that way, then I think we're looking good.
I would agree. I mean, the NHL is doing an excellent job with the bubble up in Canada, up in Edmonton and Toronto. The NBA is doing a great job with the bubble in Orlando. And because they've been doing such a great job, actually, the MLB is going to start bubbling in the playoffs. And the bubble is definitely the safest way to go about playing sports in this pandemic. And obviously, they can't have them in there for like 2 months at a time. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they're kids. They're kids. Yeah.
And they can plan, you know, NBA and NHL, they really had nothing to look off of. I mean, you can say the TBT, but that TBT is way different yeah. than what the NBA was going to be. Outside yeah. of the fact that they're locked down in the hotel, it's not the same at all. The NBA has been there for so much longer. They have so much more going on. So really the NBA and the NHL, they didn't have anything to look off of. They didn't really have any plans. College basketball, the planners right now going into this battle in the bubble potential, you know, I mean, they have something to look off of. They can see what worked well for the NBA and the NHL, and they can take ideas. And, you know, I just think that it's likely right now that we get college basketball, even if it is just this. Any sports we get is good sports because we see with college football – we don't get non-conference, but at least some schools get to play conference, which is better than nothing.
Austin Peay versus Central Arkansas is good sports.
I agree.
That was a good game.
Sports.
It was a terrible game. It was a horrible game, but I've never been happier watching a horrible game.
Exactly. Like, you could put on UConn versus UMass. UConn versus UMass football. Right so in front of me.
Pat Forty, former CBB365 guest, thinks that UConn and UMass should combine teams to make New England United.
I agree. Well, I think that UConn should just get rid of the football program entirely. You know, they've lost $90 million in 5 years. $90 million. By them not playing football this year, do you know how much money they're projected to save? $18 million.
Imagine a college basketball season with just mid-major madness, just the entire year. Just
oh, that'd be great.
No, yeah, except no. Except Gonzaga would rock everybody.
Nope, we've got Wofford. We've got Jay McCauley running the Wofford.
Jay McCauley versus Jeff Jones in the championship.
Now we're talking. Now
if they happened to beat Memphis.
Let's get the NCAA to trademark that instead of battle in the bubble, just mid-major.
I agree. Mid-major basketball is truly a phenomenon.
That's the thing. Klein was talking about how the Central Arkansas Austin Peay was a bad game. But to be honest, I thought it was so bad that it was great. I mean, it was entertaining to watch.
And it was entertaining.
Mid-major, bro, you always just get the great. You just get, like, the 30-point, like, just buckets that no one's ever heard of. Mid-major basketball is awesome. And to be honest, so is football. Just all sports. Sports are great.
I agree. That's a good take.
Sports are awesome.
Yes, I agree with that take. Sports are awesome. But
dude, it's gonna be crazy when we just have every single sport going on in, like, 2 months.
Yeah. That's true. That is going to be crazy. But you want to know what's not awesome?
What?
Cheating. And speaking of cheating, LSU coach Will Wade got in trouble yet again for Yeah, no, it's not awesome sauce, as Adam would say. But, yeah, that's facts. But he got in trouble for impermissible payments to potential recruits and others.
Impermissible cash payments
to Benny's.
either the players or people around them, family, yep. friends, etc.
Which is against
11 different players. So you know, this is good. We're stepping back to the heyday of college basketball. Gone are the the strippers of Louisville, the buy your mama house of Duke. We are back to we are back to paying the players in cold hard cash.
Yeah. That's how college basketball was meant to be. If you're gonna cheat, just give them the money. Don't move the number one recruit across the state of Tennessee.
James Wiseman.
Yep. Will Wade, the American gangster. I mean, how bad at cheating do you have to be to get caught?
Is Will Wade the second worst cheater of all time?
I don't know. I mean, number one is Pitino, right?
Is he how can you get caught as many times as Rick Pitino has?
I genuinely don't know. It's impressive. Like, and the best part about it is he did it everywhere he went. Like,
it's going to be interesting. There's going to be a punishment for Will Wade at some point, but it's not going to be soon.
Yeah,
it's going to be a long one.
Because they have to go through everyone. Like, there's no way Ben Simmons didn't get paid to go to LSU.
Yeah, he's definitely going to be on that list.
Yeah, he is. Because he was one of the best, like, ratings-wise, he was a 9999. Like,
LSU was bad. They didn't even make the playoff or make March Madness the year he was with them.
Yeah, so there's no way that he went there because he wanted to go play basketball at LSU, who was bad at the time. Like, it's not like it was a LSU. Like, it's not like a recruit going to LSU after their 2018-19 season.
Vermont Waters.
Yep.
He's probably on that list also.
Yeah. If we're being real.
Yeah, why'd you go to LSU from Connecticut?
The atmosphere.
Power 5, SEC is an okay conference. Probably knew he'd play right away.
I just think there's going to be this could be a really serious punishment for Will Wade.
Yeah, it should be.
Hammer's coming down.
I mean, rarely do we see allegations that are straight up. He paid 11 players to go to come to his program.
Yeah. That's a lot. That's almost an entire team.
That is an entire team.
Yeah.
I'm going to say right now, 2024-2025 postseason ban for Louisiana State. 2 year postseason ban.
I feel like that makes sense.
2024-2025.
Because you'd think this investigation is going to go on for like another year or so.
Well, I mean, the NCAA is painfully slow, as we know, and we've talked about many times before on the show.
Yeah, the bureaucratic inconsistencies of the NCAA.
Yes.
They make everything way more complicated than it needs to be.
This is going to be another one of those things.
Yep. But then when a smaller Power 5 program like Oklahoma State commits a level 2 violation and gets destroyed by the NCAA for it.
But they also were not a repeat offender.
Yeah, that's the worst part.
Will Wade is a repeat offender now.
And he's going to do it again.
Mike Rutherford said this, and I think it's interesting. They need to establish punishments that are harsh enough where the coach might look at it and say, wow, that hurt me a lot. I'm actually not going to do it again. And I think Oklahoma State is the first of what's going to end up being a lot of examples of the NCAA tightening up on that.
Yeah, except it means nothing unless they do it to the bigger programs.
Yeah, I'm saying they will. I just told you, I think it's going to be a 2 year postseason ban at some point down the road.
No, but by bigger programs, I mean Kansas. I mean,
those investigations are still going on. Louisville, Kansas, they're going to happen.
The bureaucratic inconsistencies of the NCAA strike once again. But it's just a mess. The NCAA sucks.
You know, I think it'd be very interesting to see LSU get the hammer brought down on them, especially if it involves, like you said, Ben Simmons and Tremont Waters, who were two of their big. Trey Waters was a 4-star. Ben Simmons, obviously number one player, ended up being the number one pick. What I think's funny is Will Wade, if it does come out that he paid Ben Simmons gave him one season that wasn't good enough to make March Madness.
It's also now Will Wade has the ability to say, look, we produced Ben Simmons.
Also very true. Yeah, I mean, that's a huge recruiting. I mean, if it comes out that Ben Simmons isn't in the report, I guess it's more legit. But, I mean, we all know Will Wade didn't do anything with the development of Ben Simmons. I mean, yeah, going into college.
He did enough to go to the NBA straight out of high school.
Going into college, he was the number one pick. He had a mediocre season. He was still the number one pick. It's like nothing changed. So, but that is a huge recruiting pull factor. And getting kids to come to your school is having a number one pick. So I guess in that aspect, it does help. But really, though, he doesn't have much success. They went to the Sweet 16 a couple years ago. But Will Wade, I don't know if you guys remember, he wasn't even on that trip. He was suspended. And I believe they played Michigan State and ended up losing. But, I mean, Will Wade wasn't even with them because he was undergoing scandal. I mean, this guy's always in trouble. And I think this time, if the NCAA does bring it down, I think he's going to be looking elsewhere for a job. And to be honest, it'll probably be in the NAAC with Rick Pitino. So maybe that could be the conference where...
That could be the washed-up coach conference. The WUCC, the WOC. Let's make the WOC. The washed-up coach conference.
And once Coach K gets fired for cheating, then he's gonna go...
Coach K will die before he is fired from Duke.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But big thanks for Jay McCauley coming on our show. The second head coach we've had on the show. Really fun interview. What do you guys think? You thought it was fun?
I think Jay is a great guy. I think he's going to be one of the best up-and-coming coaches. You touched on that earlier. But Jay's one of the best up-and-coming coaches in the college basketball ranks. I would not be surprised. Great dude, great coach. I would not be surprised to see him at a big program here in a couple of years. But, yeah, just like you said, great interview. So really appreciate him coming on, and good episode.